Ahead of the 30th anniversary of China's crackdown on peaceful pro-democracy demonstrators in Tiananmen Square, Radio Prague spoke to Philip Jerosz, coordinator of the China Watching think tank Synopsis, about the politics behind some of the more controversial aspects of business dealings between the two countries. Harsh critics of China's sweeping Belt and Road Initiative, to which the Czech Republic has signed on, and the main Chinese investment vehicle here, CEFC, he further argues that allowing Huawei to roll out the 5G network would be a disaster. Brian Kennedy has more.
Philip Jerosz of Synopsis finds it troubling, to put it mildly, the degree to which the Czech president and other political and business elites have opened the door to business with China, an authoritarian state experimenting with capitalism where transparency remains a rare commodity. I began by asking him what he thought of China's Belt and Road Initiative, introduced in September 2013. Which aims to build a vast network of highways, railways, ports, and pipelines linking Asia via the Middle East to Europe.
In April, there was yet another Belt and Road Summit, which some listeners might know better as the New Silk Road Project, as it was once called. Estimates vary on the amount of money spent, but generally it's a $1 trillion project, the biggest infrastructure project since the Marshall Plan, which Czechoslovakia was famously prevented from joining. What makes this troublesome or worrisome?
Lack of transparency. This is what is the problem with the regime in China in general. You don't really know who actually is often behind these projects. Quite often it is actually state-owned companies that are, for example, doing the Belt and Road projects. Again, clear links to the communist regime itself, which then quite often leads to, if nothing else, a suspicion that this initiative is all about promotion and advancement of Chinese interests themselves in the various kind of countries. This is part of the reason why it's been creating so much backlash all over the world. We can talk about debt trap diplomacy. That's definitely possibly part of it. But at the same time, there's been a lot of issues from environmental to security and especially to whether those projects are actually necessary. In a lot of the countries we've seen, the projects are not necessary and are basically promoted by the political elite to sort of split the benefits. As we've seen in Malaysia, you have actually a pretty hefty amount of evidence to show that this was basically a very corrupt project in Malaysia, where the previous corrupt government was actually splitting the money with the Chinese SOE that was running one of the projects. And we've seen corruption going on. We've seen Chinese push for lack of transparency at these projects. And also, obviously, the problem that it's actually Chinese companies that build the projects that quite often ship in their own workers, ship in their own material. And it's, again, not investment quite often, but more likely it's actually loans. So that's another problem. So the economic benefits are often, let's say, not clear. The local governments often refuse to make any proper independent assessment of whether this is feasible, whether this is actually necessary. But mainly in Africa, Central Asia, Southeast Asia, the governments just push for it and then sell it to their voters as, look, we have brought in Chinese investment. We're doing something for the people. But as I said, as we've seen, quite often this is not to the benefit of the people as the whole, as the mass, but to a couple of wealthy and powerful individuals in the country and to the benefit of the Chinese regime and the companies involved.
Right. A bridge or a road is something very tangible that the average person can see and as evidence that the government is doing something, but it might end up being the kind of famous bridge to nowhere or road to nowhere that no one actually uses. You mentioned the debt trap, and there's concern that the Chinese government is actually counting on default, and this is a way to seize land or ports, and in some cases even to establish military bases.
This is something that has been debated in the academic circles for quite a while. We don't really know whether this is the ultimate goal to get these countries into debt, but it's definitely, if it wasn't the goal, if this is not strategic, it's actually working out pretty good in the sense, like, both you silence these countries that are involved in critique. For example, we can see this clearly with what's going on in Xinjiang with the persecution of the local ethnic, the local Turkic ethnicities that are being persecuted, and at the same time, the Muslim world being completely silent because of Chinese money. At the same time, we have seen the first establishment of Chinese military bases overseas within the last couple of years as part of the Belt and Road Initiative. For example, in Djibouti, then you have the military outpost or military base in Tajikistan, which has so far been completely denied by the local government, but we actually have the satellite views and pictures to prove it. And if you, for example, link it to what's going on in South China Sea, this is definitely linked to it. This is a way to utilize money that the Chinese regime can't really use domestically because it's foreign reserves. And they basically take this money, invest in all kinds of strange projects that often involve a lot of the political elite. So they use this for elite capture.
Elite capture is a form of corruption whereby public resources are biased for the benefit of powerful individuals in detriment to the welfare of the larger population. In the opinion of Philip Jurosz, elite capture is at the heart of China's deals made abroad. In some cases, it serves private interests rather than China's national interest, as evidenced by some high-profile corruption cases.
The deals should be checked. You know, any deal you make with the Chinese state should be checked by, ideally, an independent committee of lawyers, of people who are actually statesmen, to make sure that this is a good deal, this is something that benefits the people and not only the people running it.
If we could turn specifically to the Czech case.
Yeah.
The Czech president, Miloš Zeman, is well known around the world as being especially close to China, to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago, when he welcomed his Chinese counterpart to Prague Castle, there was a 21-gun salute, first time in half a century. And yet, ahead of the summit in April, even President Zeman was complaining a bit that the fruits of this investing this political capital, essentially, had not come in terms of actual investment. How do you see it?
Well, I would say this is pretty much what has been going on in what we sometimes ourselves here call like the third world or the developing world. The same practices in the sense that the Chinese reach out to a specific group that has links to political elites and people and big businesses around them. This, I think, is the only explanation to what's going on in the Czech Republic as well, because you see clear evidence and clear coinciding times between when the company PPF, which is the by far the largest financial group that even though registered in the Netherlands, is actually of Czech origin. It is a product of the post-communist privatization. So this is a very big player, a player that has been known to sort of hedging in politics, basically buying up political influence among the parties. Again, this is hard to prove, but we've seen clear links, especially personal links between people who are working for example, the presidential office and who are actually working for PPF, the company itself. And basically, around the year, let's say 2014, PPF started a sort of a pilot, or it was actually earlier than that, but they already had a pilot project for non-banking sort of commercial loans going on called Home Credit in China. And what they got, and this is basically already proven to be a fact, what they got from the Chinese side was you need to get political backing back in your country as long as you want to actually get a nationwide license to do this. And basically the political backing you need is because of how the Chinese market works. There is no rule of law. The regulators often behave unpredictably. And so for the Chinese side to actually be sure that you are not going to do anything wrong or bad, potentially harmful, they need to have the government of your sort of home country involved. So they basically started influencing a lot of the political elites here, started helping China to do elite capture tactic that we've talked about. And then they turned the sort of human rights lost cause foreign policy towards China, where we promoted, for example, the interests of Tibet or Taiwan, which is why the Czech Republic, for example, has really good ties with Taiwan. And they turned it around, started talking about economic diplomacy. But from what we've seen, and this has been going on for what, like 5 years? The only beneficiary of this turn was actually PPF itself, because its income in China has risen tremendously.
The Czech Republic, in effect, signed on to the Belt and Road Initiative more than 4 years ago. The private conglomerate CEFC emerged as the flagship for Chinese investments. President Zeman even named its chairman as his honorary advisor. But allegations of corruption and demonstrable mismanagement led CEFC to implode. The company's former chairman is believed to be in prison in China, though rumors circulate of an untimely death following his arrest last year. In any case, the Czech assets of the scandal-ridden firm have since been taken over by another Chinese state-owned enterprise called CITIC. These assets include the football club Slavia Prague, the airline travel service, the Lobkowitz Brewery, and various hotels and office buildings.
Is there a positive side to this investment? Are the Chinese filling a role that no one else is?
No. I will elaborate, don't worry. So CEFC has been basically proven to be sort of like a pyramid scheme. But instead of your usual pyramid scheme or Ponzi scheme where you have small sort of investors, you had state-owned enterprises sort of within the system that CEFC put up. Because of how the system works in China, where basically state-owned enterprises get a lot of money, but they don't know what to do with them, so they usually give it to, they outsource it, basically. And there's been several companies like CEFC who took that money and went abroad, invested. Usually it was actually acquisitions, not really investment, which is what happened here as well. But what's kind of curious about the Czech case is that it seems, and there's a lot of evidence to that effect, that it was actually not even Chinese money that was behind these acquisitions, but it was actually, let's say, Slovak or Czechoslovak money that they borrowed from this bank called JNT, which then actually took over CFC's assets for a short period. I think it was like 2 weeks of time last year. And so CFC only did acquisitions. They bought a football club. They bought luxury and debt assets in the sense like those assets were not, unless a lot of management was put behind them, there was no profit to be made. So it was clearly political. We can obviously speculate what was the actual reasoning and what was the purpose of this sort of vanguard of Chinese investments, let's say, in the Czech Republic. Some would say it was clearly just the advancement of Chinese interests and elite capture tactics in the Czech Republic.
Philip Jurosz of the think tank Synopsis went on to say that while elite capture is not new, it has clearly intensified under President Xi's Belt and Road Initiative. In his view, so too has economic espionage, as documented by the Czech counterintelligence agency, BIS. He also argues that for the Czech Republic to allow the technology company Huawei to do the 5G rollout here would be an enormous mistake. Huawei has ties and de facto obligations to cooperate with the Chinese intelligence services, as well as the army, he notes.
It would be, I would say, stupid of us to disregard this in such an important matter as is the security of our infrastructure. Of, you know, internet is now becoming more and more important piece of infrastructure than ever before. So we should definitely be wary of that. And if anything else, really not allow Chinese tech or any other technological company that has clear ties to some sort of authoritarian regime, to some sort of military that has no transparency whatsoever into what we call is the critical infrastructure.
Philip Jurosz, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.